Continuing in Mitzvah Shin Beis 302, which is a special mitzvah to bring the Korban of Barley, called the Korban HaOmer, on the second day of Pesach. We're at the section that begins Mishor Shea Mitzvah, the reasoning behind the mitzvah. Kedeshin is bonein mitocha maise hachesed agodol shos Hashem baruchu imbriyosav lechadish lahem shana shana tivua lemichya. That every year God provides new grain sprouting from the earth for people to eat. That we have this principle that Sefer HaChinuch has introduced several times, which is that when we take a certain object and we focus that on the service of God, so it causes God's blessing to come down onto this particular type of object. So we have to remember God before we enjoy the new produce of the year. That when God is pleased with us, that we remember that it's God who gives us the grain, so he's going to bless the new grain for the year. And we're going to have a good crop, and it's just going to be spiritually beneficial and religiously significant all around. Shechofetz mirov tuvo v'virkas briyosov. So that God wants it to be from his goodness, that he wants his creations to benefit from his blessing. So say, why shouldn't this be on the first day of Pesach? Why should it be on the second day of Pesach? So the answer is, k'dei shelo na'arev simcha b'simcha, ki arisho nachon l'zecher ha'neis ha'gadol shotzianu baruchu me'avdos l'cheros mi'arol l'simcha. So the first day, there's too much going on the first day already. You have the whole Seder, you have to remember all the stuff that, the miracle specifically of God taking us out of Egypt. So the second day of Pesach, it's around the season that you have the new grain sprouting, but it's on the second day of Pesach, so there shouldn't be too much going on the first day. Oh, yeah,
it's also Chol HaMoed. It's a Ketira, right?
What if it falls in Shabbos?
Huh?
What if it falls in Shabbos?
Okay,
fine. Midinei haMitzvah, Ma Shamar Zichronon Levracha, SheMitzvah Sval Shel Omer LaHavio Min HaSeorim, that the mitzvah of the Korban Omer is to bring it from barley, velo min achitem, velo mikusim, v'shibol ashual v'shifon. That it's specifically, that we know that in the Torah there are five species of grain, which are traditionally translated as wheat, barley, rye, oats, spelt. So the traditional identifications, which is given in Rashi, for example, is somewhat questionable. Then everybody agrees with that. So first of all, before we get to academic study, so it's already a machlokes rishonim that the Rambam says that shibola shual, which is translated by Rashi as oats, is not oats, but rather it says wild barley. So wild barley is a different type of barley, and some academics say that it's a certain species of barley which is called two-road barley. It looks a little different. So this makes a certain amount of sense because barley, oats and barley don't share that many. It's supposed to be a type of species of barley. That's what it says in Chazal, that Shibola Shul is related to barley. So oats are not related to barley. The plants look completely different. If you've ever seen an oat plant and a barley plant. And of course, the gluten content of oats is very, very low, and in certain cases have been bred to be completely gluten-free, which is why certain members of our shul who are on a gluten-free diet, I like to have oats. They make hamotzi on bread made of oats. So again, the traditional identifications are somewhat questionable, both based on other Rishonim and based on academic study. But nevertheless, though traditionally we consider the five species of grain wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. Nevertheless, so we don't bring it from oats, wheat, rye, spelt. We bring it from barley. Why? So like you said last time, that it's barley is the first species also that grows during the year, that sprouts forth during the year. So from the close barley stalks to Yerushalayim, and it was the first ones that sprouted. Lo biker akarov. Let's say they were looking around Yerushalayim and all the barley fields around Yerushalayim, and they didn't find any newly sprouted barley. So what are you going to do? Mevian also Mikol Makom Meretz Yisrael, that the Korban Omer is kosher, even though we try to bring it from Yerushalayim, it's kosher from any place in Eretz Yisrael.
Wait a second, from Yerushalayim, there aren't simply barley fields within this, whatever the city limits were.
Not city limits, close. It says close. Look, okay. If you can't, don't find close to Yerushalayim, then you can bring from anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. And by this detail, that the Korban Omer can only be brought from Eretz Yisrael, and based on the close relationship between the Korban Omer and the permission of the new grain, which we're going to discuss in the next mitzvah. So some have suggested that this is one reason why the prohibition of chadash, of eating the new grain before the Omer, is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael. But we'll discuss more details about that in the next mitzvah. O mitzvah sol he kotzer balayla. It's supposed to be cut down. It's supposed to be harvested on the night, on Motzei Yontev Rishon of Pesach. Bileel Yudvav B'Nisan, on the 16th night of Nisan. What we would call Yontev Sheni, but people in Eretz Yisrael would consider Motzei Yontev the first night of Chol HaMoed. Bein Bechol, Bein B'Shabbes. So even though normally you're not allowed to cut things from the ground on Shabbos, nevertheless, since it's specifically supposed to be offered at this time, so therefore you're allowed to cut down the new grain even for the Korban Omer, even on Shabbos. So mitzvah so lahavio min halach. It's supposed to be fresh. Not supposed to be dry grain. It's supposed to be nice, moist, fresh kernels of grain. Perush kadeshia nira v'nikar yoser la'ayin bikuro. So people should look at it and say, oh, that's the new barley. That's the fresh one, and that's, oh, you know, it's clearer that it's the new ones. All the towns that were close to the barley fields outside of Yerushalayim used to get together. Kedesha Niktzar Be'ese Gadol. It used to be a big thing, a big party that everyone would get together and they would cut the Omer. That since there's such a happiness and a simcha associated with this cutting of the Omer, so people should focus more on the idea that it's God who blesses the new grains and should have in mind the religious principles associated therewith. V'shalosh sin elu, remember, they used to take kutch of three sin, and out of that, they used to derive one omer, the very a small percentage of the shalosh sin, remember, after being sifted with 13 sieves. Elu yukotun oso b'shlosha anoshim, u'shalosh kupos u'shlosha magos. So there used to be three men, and three baskets, to put it in, and three scythes to or sickles to cut the grain. The chayvan shechashecha when it's nighttime already. Omer hakotzer laomdim sham ba shemesh. The guy who was in charge of cutting it, who was wielding the sickle, said, "Has the sun set?" The omrin lo hein ba shemesh. Omrin lo hein ba shemesh. Amrimlo, hein, three times, you know, you used to have like this cheer, you know, going to cut down the Omer. Magalzo, we're going to use this sickle, Omer and hein. V'chein shal shebabim. Kupazo, we're going to use this basket to gather it, Omer hein, each one. This basket, yes, this basket, yes, this basket, yes. Three times they used to have this little cheer. V'chein shal shebabim. Ektor, am I going to cut now? Amrimlo, ktor, cut. Am I going to cut? Cut! Am I going to cut? Cut! Harvest! 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 Shalosha palmim v'chol kach lama. Why are we emphasizing it so much? What's this big deal? It sounds like lahavda, like a sporting event, that we're having these cheers, that they have to encourage your team to go. Why? You're encouraging your team because it is your team, because there was an opposing team. And who were the opposing team? Oh, yes.
Nothing ever changes.
Yeah, they were the deviant sects in the time of the Second Temple. We discussed this last time a little bit. How does the Torah introduce the mitzvah of Korban HaOmer in the when it's talking about this? So it says after Shabbos, mimacharas Shabbos. So what's the traditional interpretation? That means, yeah. Pesach, just the first Yom Tov of Pesach. The day after the first Yom Tov of Pesach, you offer up the Korban HaOmer. But what's an alternative interpretation that you could understand just by reading the Pasuk?
The Shabbos
Regular Shabbos, yes. So according to
Shabbos Chalamoyed,
Exactly. So according to these sects, the Stukim, the Baisusim, they had their own readings of the Torah Shebichsav. So they used to say Shu Shabbos Bereishis, that it means that the Omer was supposed to be offered up on the first Sunday of Pesach. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's only one Sunday. On the Sunday of after the first day of Pesach. Sorry, right, so it could be, you're right. Yeah. So the Sunday after the first day of Pesach. Okay. So we had a problem here. So that they used to, and they would say, of course, that Shavuos was 7 weeks later, and Shavuos would always fall on a Sunday, because it's 7 weeks after this Korban HaOmer. They did this also because they wanted, unlike us, that we prefer our space between holy days. They thought it was gevaldik to have 2 days in a row, Shabbos and then Yantif. So, I mean, there was in Eretz Yisrael in those times, unless people were celebrating 2 days Rosh Hashanah, so there was no 3-day Yantif. But they were so excited to have a 2-day Yantif, because that, you know, they didn't get with any sort of frequency necessarily. They were so excited to have a 2-day Yantif that this was part of the motivation that they wanted Shavuos to always fall on Sunday. I also think it's funny because you know how the sages who originally devised our current fixed calendar so rigged it in a certain way that, you know, Rosh Hashanah couldn't fall on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, and Pesach can't fall on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday. So those riggings were good in the olden days because they didn't want Yom Kippur to fall on us on Friday or Sunday. Mm-hmm. So, okay. But nowadays, you know, we should have different riggings. You know, I wouldn't mind Rosh Hashanah falling on Friday or Sunday, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur falling on Friday or Sunday. You know, we would much rather rig it so that Erev Pesach never falls on Shabbos, and rig it so that so then Purim is on Friday that year, which is also annoying. Or maybe they should have said that Shavuot should never fall on Sunday, Lahotzi Miliban. You know, this year. You know, this upcoming year, if we continue with a fixed calendar, so then Shavuos is going to fall on Sunday. So great. So the Stukim would be happy. Oh, you see that even you, Prushim, you rabbinic Jews are celebrating Shavuos on Sunday this year. So we're being Yotze, all of us. So it's great. But certain things we have in Chazal, they used to do things Lahotzi Miliban. They used to do it exactly the opposite of the way that Stukim wanted to do it in order to make a point. Okay. But that's the way it is for now. The Yeser Pratea, the rest of the details, Mizbarin Mushlam Perik Asiri Mimenachos. This is explained in the 10th Perik of Menachos. Venoheges Vizman Habayis Vizcharim. This is applicable in the time of the Beis HaMikdash when males, wives, Afil Yisrael Mchayav Lishtadal B'mitzvah Zu, that even Israelites are supposed to take part in this mitzvah. That everybody had a part to play in this mitzvah. So they used to go the day before Pesach, and they used to tie sheaves, even though they were still attached to the ground, which makes it easier to cut. So the main part is what the Kohanim do, which is the offering on the Mizbech, and the waving, and the taking of the handful and throwing it on the altar. And this is all called Zibbe Kohanim, yeah.
Okay, now, I'm a little sort of puzzled about the question of exceptions made, you know, to the laws of Yontov and Shabbos. If there's a bris, it's on the ground on Shabbos, okay?
Right.
Then we are very careful to limit the violations of Shabbos to just what's absolutely necessary for the bris. Here, what's the business about tying up? There's also
no that's Erev Yontif. Tying up is Erev Yontif.
In other words, Erev Pesach.
Right.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, before the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the right on the first day.
Erev Yontif.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. V'chol zekibanim v'kol makom keben sheish b'chelek l'kol Yisrael v'yisod ha-mitzvah v'bnei chidish ha-tevua shehu ha-dover ha-tzarech l'kol yesh lanu l'chos v'chezvan ha-mitzvah ha-mutalos al-kol Yisrael. So since there was a part played by all Jews, so therefore I'm going to count it in the mitzvahs that are relevant to all Jews, even though it was the Kohanim who were doing the main work for offering the Korban HaOmer. Fine.
the pasuk in one of the Rambam says that he brings a proof. I mean, there's this whole back and forth, you know, in the classical literature about a discussion between the Prushim and the Tzdukim about what day Shavuot Shaval and what day they should offer the Korban HaOmer. That one of the proofs is that it says in the pasuk in Yoshua, which I believe is that it says that Vayochlu Mimocharas HaPesach Matzos VeKalui. It says on the day after they ate the Korban Pesach, they ate grain. The implication meaning that they weren't allowed to eat this grain before because it was Chodesh. So the idea is, so why does the pasuk say Mimocharas HaPesach? If it's really supposed to be Shabbos. So in other words, that Tzdukim would say, well, you know, it just happened to be that Pesach fell on Shabbos that year. So therefore, they said on the day after Pesach, they ate the new grain. So the Rambam says, so why bother telling you that? If the issue is Shabbos and not Pesach, so why does the Pasuk emphasize that it was the day after Pesach that they ate the new grains? Okay. There are proofs back and forth either ways, but yeah. Mitzvah Shin Gimel, Mitzvah 303. Oh, very important mitzvah. Shelo lechol mitvuah chadosha kodem klos yom yudvav benisan. That one is not allowed to eat the new grain before the end of the 16th of Nisan, which is the day after the first day of Pesach. Shelo lechol lechem mitvuah chadosha kodem klos yom shisha sar benisan shenemar velechem. We just learned this Friday and on Thursday. Velechem bekali vecharmelo sochelu. That's emayom hazeh. That one should not eat bread and roasted grain and fresh grain until this very day. Mishor shea mitzvah. What's the reasoning behind it? So tell this to the paleo people. The Sefer HaChinuch says that the main part of the human diet is grains. That we're supposed to bring a korban, like we discussed in the last mitzvah, the korban omer, we're supposed to bring before people derive benefit from the new grains. It's like making a bracha before you eat. So you recognize that your food ultimately comes from God, and you have to thank God before eating your food. So too, you have to offer your korban before partaking of the new grains. As I wrote many times in my Sefer, that the idea is that we're supposed to bring ourselves up to a spiritual level that we could be the receptacles of the divine blessing. So again, on the 16th of Nisan, what took place in the Beis HaMikdash? They used to offer the Korban Omer, which consisted of new barley from the current year's crop. So it comes earlier, like we heard that happened in Russia as well. So even though you don't offer, you might think that you have to offer a korban of wheat and barley and rye and oats and spelt, but no, you only have to offer up the barley, and that permits the all types of new grain from to be consumed. Even though they're not barley per se. Midine ha-mitzvah, the halachos are as follows. Masham zichron lebracha, shechamesh tvos levad, hein shehein bichlal iser hachodosh. That the new grains that may not be eaten before the omer is offered up are vehein chita usor vechusemes v'shual v'shifon. So either wheat, barley, rye, oats, or spelt, or in the some academic definitions, wheat, barley, two-road barley. What's it called? There's another type of wheat. Emmer wheat or something like that? Spelt, I think, might be one of them anyway, or spelt is just a species of wheat.
Spelt, I think, is actually very closely related to wheat.
Right, spelt is very closely related to wheat. So whether or not spelt is actually included in the list is definitely a min dogon. Either it's just a type of wheat, or it's one of the listed separately. Fine.
And rye, though, it definitely is.
Rye, interestingly enough, so rye is a European grain, which I think was not, which according to academics, was not used in the times of the Tanoim, the Jew in Eretz Yisrael. But the thing about rye is that it's much closer in properties to the other minei dagan than oats is. So rye naturally has gluten, and it's a similar, more similar botanically than oats is the other minei dagan. So that's the question. So if you're holding like these academic people that rye isn't really supposed to be on the list,
you have to worry about rye being yashan then, right?
Right. So
you ever find out, by the way, whether
I have it on my phone. I can look up for you for a second. Yeah, I just
had it. Some rye.
I think it's okay. But I'll double check for you. Yeah. So, but the question is this list absolutely exclusive? Are these all the minei dagan, or if you find another type of grain somewhere in the world that has similar properties to the chameshes minei dagan the Chazal enumerated, so would that count as well? So for rye, you sort of have a sfeik lechumra. So maybe it's on the list, and even if it's not on the list, maybe it should be considered like a min dagan anyway because it has similar properties. But it will say no. The list is absolutely exclusive. It's not a list of Chazal, so then it is not a min dagan. Period.
So quinoa definitely is not the.
It's not.
No, that's not related. Rice is not related to the chameshes minei dagan. It has no gluten. And some people say that the real point of the chameshes minei dagan is things that have gluten. That's why the chameshes minei dagan also are the things that can become chametz on Pesach. So again, we don't know exactly what chametz is on from the Torah, what the Torah exactly means when it says chametz. We know when you put something, when yeast makes something rise, that's chametz.
Something without gluten. You know, the bubbles are, the yeast is going to make bubbles, and the bubbles are just going to escape.
Right, so exactly right.
And it doesn't have the,
exactly
the
right
protein, which is elastic and which makes it rise,
Right, so that's the point that some people say, that's why the reason that the Torah enumerated these, not the Torah, but the oral tradition enumerated that it was these five species of grain which can become chametz and are also the only things that are chayven. Challah, etc. These are the grains al pi Torah because it has to have gluten. So then you have a problem also with your oat things, that even if you would assume that oats are on the list, if oats have been specially bred not to have gluten.
Or else we'll do it, still a problem. So.
Right, but I'm saying, but the consistency of oats, like if you have, there are people who market oat matzah for Pesach under the assumption that oats is really one of the chametz
meidag and
gluten-free.
But
the consistency is completely different because the structure doesn't hold together in the same way as the regular gluten.
Stretch. In other words, if it doesn't make an elastic dough which will trap carbon dioxide from yeast and rise, that is halachic.
Okay.
Spirochetes aren't molecules. They're much bigger than molecules.
They're smaller.
They have to be spiral
smaller, also. Larger molecules, that's why it's elastic, because the molecules are large. The molecules of the protein in the grain.
Okay. Fine. Yes. I know people who are gluten free who have sensitivity to what's called gluten free oats. Also, that's certainly true. But anyway, the question is whether you have all these questions about what exactly should be considered chameshes minei dagan. We know there is a famous shita in the Gemara of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. The Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that rice can become chametz. So that has no gluten, so he obviously had a different definition of chametz that did not involve gluten. So he would probably say that oats could become chametz, even if you assume they're not one of the chametz minei dagan, even if they have no gluten. Again, we don't know, we don't understand exactly what's going on with all these things, but that's an important point to make. And it also has nafka mina for the bracha. So people who are saying, well, now we know, now we suspect that oats are not really one of the chameshes minei dagan, so what bracha should be oatmeal?
Well, if it is not the chameshes minei, probably hadama, right?
Right, so if it's not one of chameshes minei dagan, it should be hadama. Classically, oatmeal was assumed to be mizonos. We have a problem with that, because what's the bracha on rice?
Well, it depends again.
No, it's mizonos.
Regular cooked rice. So regular cooked rice is mizonos because when you cook it in a type of dish, so it has the similar properties, that it fills you up, and it's a very similar to the chameshes minei dagan. So therefore, the bracha is mizonos. So therefore, some people say that even if oats is not one of the chamesh made of dagan, Chazal never discussed oats. But if they would have seen oats, they would have said that oatmeal is mizonos too, because it has very similar properties to rice and very similar properties to the chamesh made of dagan when you cook it in a porridge.
We also know now that mushrooms are not created by spontaneous generation, and we still say shakol and mushrooms.
Mushrooms doesn't have
this. We don't change the bracha.
Yeah, but Chazal never discussed those. But now we have to apply it. We have to apply the principles
if
that they.
In other words, if they never saw our oats, in other words, they, you know, right. the oats that we know of are not what they were talking about. That's what you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, but except the only thing we really know about this, however, is what they'll say the Rishonim and so forth. You know.
Right, so as a machlokes
Rishonim, Europeans, and they were the
right. So they assumed that it was oats, but like I said, the Rambam says that it's not oats.
Mm-hmm.
So in the some academics say that there were no oats. There might have existed, but they weren't used as a food crop in Eretz Yisrael in those times. They probably weren't discussing oats. Whatever it is, so you should try to get out of the issue. I mean, that's why regular healthy people should not eat oat matzah on Pesach. It's a shaila being mevatel mitzvahs seida raisa. If you have no other choice, so it's better than nothing. You rely on Rashi that oats are one of the chameshes mina dagan. But if you have any type of choice, so you should not eat matzah. They're only for people who absolutely cannot eat any regular matzah. That's why I also say that it depends how sick you're going to get, obviously, if you're really going to get ill, so you don't put yourself in the situation. But some people, you know, who have a sensitivity to gluten, so if you go the whole year without eating any gluten, and you have one kezias, you know, a real size of an olive, of regular matzah on Pesach, so then it's not going to hurt you. So if that's the case, then yeah, save up all your gluten, you know, through the whole year. Don't touch gluten. Shabbos Yontif. So Shabbos Yontif is not so much of a shaila, because even though you're supposed to make hamotzia and the Shabbos meals, if it's going to make you sick, so you're exempt. And we assume that the other foods that you eat during the Shabbos meal, even if your oat bread is not hamotzi, so we assume that the other breads that you eat during the meal are for you. That's a kviya suda, therefore you'd be yotzi the Shabbos sudas even if you don't wash, even though healthy people are supposed to wash for the Shabbos meals. Which is also why, like we were discussing on Sukkot on the first night, that nowadays that some Rishonim say anyway that if you eat that even if you don't wash and you eat like things like meat and fish in a real meal type of setting, so you have to go to the sukkah even though you're not washing. Mm-hmm. Others say, no, you don't eat meat and fish are like fruit and you never have to, you're not required to eat them in the sukkah. But some people are going to say that nowadays, people hardly ever wash, so now you really should eat meat and fish in the sukkah.
So isn't there an idea that you can base a meal on wine? No,
there's kviya sud al hayayin. It doesn't mean that's what you wash and bench on.
But there's such a you can have wine outside of a sukkah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So in other words, if you go
except according to the Ritva, but according to most poskim, right.
Oh, okay, okay. So in other words, so I don't know exactly how much wine you have to drink in order to make it the kviya suda.
The kviya suda is not a din in the wine making the suda sudas keva. Sudas kviya suda al hayayin means that you honor the meal by drinking wine during the meal. It's the opposite direction. That's why, for example, the Rambam says that you're required to be koveya shol shudas al hayayin. He says all the Shabbos meals you have to be koveya al hayayin. It's not that the wine causes it to become a sudas keva. It's that you're supposed to honor all the Shabbos meals by drinking wine during the meal. And just for Kiddush doesn't help. You're supposed to drink wine during the meal, according to Rambam, in all three Shabbos meals.
Does grape juice count?
Yeah, grape juice counts. Yeah. Fine. So the... So they're fine. So these five species of grain are the ones that are problematic regarding the prohibition of Chadash, but things like rice, millet, things of that nature are kidneys certainly are not have no relevance to the prohibition of Chadash and can be eaten with impunity at any time during the year, except Pesach and fast days. fine. Vizman Abayis Mishikar Vomer Biyom Yud Babenisan Yamater Mutar Chadash. Birushalayim. So how did the timing work when you had the Korban HaOmer? So you have these people, they have their stocks of new grain in their house. They have new grain and they're dying to eat the new crop of grain from the year. And they have it on the 16th of Nisan, the day after the first day of Pesach. And they want to know when they're allowed to eat it. When did the Beis Din offer the Korban HaOmer and now they're allowed to eat the Chadash. So people who lived in Yerushalayim and would go to, you know, stand on a hill, look at the Beis HaMikdash, and you know, they wave a flag from the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, the Omer is not. I'm making that up, but they have some indication. Their word would spread from the Beis HaMikdash to Yerushalayim that yes, they already offered up the Korban Omer, and therefore one is allowed to eat Chadash, the new grain now. That if you don't live in Yerushalayim, you don't know the exact time that the Beis Din offered up the Korban HaOmer, then you can wait until Chatzos, and after Chatzos, you're allowed to eat the Chadash. Lefi Shein Beis Din Misatzlin Bo Ad Achar Chatzos. You know that the Beis Din made sure that the Kohanim offered up the Korban HaOmer before Chatzos. They would never delay and be lazy and offer up the Korban HaOmer after Chatzos.
It's still valid after Chatzos, though.
Right. Any time during the day is okay, but they would never do it after Chatzos. So you can rely on the Chazakah. So you can assume after Chatzos that the Korban HaOmer was offered up and you're allowed to eat the Chadash. But what's the din? You might think, if it's the Korban HaOmer that permits the consumption of Chadash, no Korban HaOmer nowadays, we're never allowed to eat grain. The new grain never had his permission based on the Korban HaOmer. No. The Torah says that when there's no Korban HaOmer, that the prohibition extends the entire day. You just have to wait till the end of the 16th of Nisan, and then you're allowed to eat the Chadash. Because the Torah says, what does it say? V'lech am v'kali v'charmelo sochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh ad haviachem es korban elokechem. So it says two things. Ad etzem hayom hazeh. And then it says, Ad haviachem es korban elokechem, until this very day. And then it says also that until the time that the korban is offered up. So what we derive from that is that when there's a korban, the chadash becomes permissible only after the korban. When there's no korban, it's an ad etzem hayom hazeh, that until that very day, you are not allowed to eat the chadash. But once that day is over, then you are allowed to eat the chadash. So we know that we have this principle in halacha that's like 2 days yontif, that we in Chutz La'aretz are never really sure exactly which day it is. So it could be the previous day as well. So therefore, what we call the 16th of Nisan is our yontif sheni of Pesach. So we're worried that today is the first day of Pesach, not the day after Pesach. So you have people who keep 2 days yontif have to wait till the day after Yontif. In other words, after the first days of Pesach, not the first day of Pesach, and you're not allowed to eat Chadash until the night following the second day of Pesach, meaning the night of the, meaning until the end of the 17th of Nisan. So the details of the prohibition of Chadash are given in the 10th paragraph of Maseches Menachos in certain places in Maseches Shvi'es and Maisres and Chala. Oh, so here's the kicker. V'noeg yisr zeh b'chol makom u'v'chol zman. The prohibition of Chadash is applicable in all places and all times. Bein b'fnei abayis, bein shelo b'fnei abayis, whether before when the Beis HaMikdash exists or the Beis HaMikdash does not exist. Bizchar menekevos applies to male and female, just like anything of kashrus, it applies to both men and women. U'mishavar al zebachal kezayis mipas chodosh kodem yom akrovas omer chayav malkus. Then you are chayav malkus if you eat any chodosh. Ah. So here's what we have to discuss right now. The Sefer HaChinuch says that the prohibition of Chadash is applicable in all places and all times, meaning including in Chutz La'aretz. In America, we are required to be careful about the prohibition of Chadash, and grain that grew or got planted before Pesach will not be permitted until the day after what we call the second day of Pesach, until the 17th of Nisan in Eretz Yisrael, the 16th of Nisan. But we have a problem. Yeah. This applies, by the way, to any grain that did not take root before the 16th of Nisan. So taking root, according to some sheet, this means 3 days. According to some, it was has to be planted 2 weeks before Pesach. So basically, you have the idea that what you would call winter crops, the crops that were planted in the winter and have been sitting in the ground for a long time, you know, are starting to grow before Pesach, are now going to become mutter before when Pesach arrives. And crops that are summer crops, which are planted after Pesach and harvested at the end of the summer, are going to be chadash until the following Pesach. So therefore, you have a problem. The interesting thing is that this corresponds very well to the growing season in Eretz Yisrael. That in Eretz Yisrael, Yashan is, besides the fact that everybody agrees that Yashan and the Chodosh in Eretz Yisrael is an Isur Daraisa, so that there's nothing to discuss. So it's not even an issue because this corresponds to the growing season of wheat in Eretz Yisrael, and you wouldn't have to worry about it at all, even left to your own devices in general. Hmm. In general.
So why have Yisur then?
There might be a few days difference, but it's not going to be a whole season off like it is in certain places in America where they plant wheat in the spring and they after Pesach and then they harvest it in the summer, which would be a problem the entire winter using that from that crop of wheat. So that is subject to the prohibition of Chadash. And we know that in many places in Chutz Laaretz, even though the Sefer HaChinuch tells us that the prohibition of Chadash is applicable in all places and all times, we know that in many places in Chutz Laaretz, they were not careful about the prohibition of Chadash. In Europe, we find that Ashkenazi communities in Northern Europe especially were not careful about the prohibition of Chadash by and large. And also, oddly enough, in such a place as Yemen. In Yemen, they were not makbid on Chadash. There was a small minority of people who were, but in general, people were not makbid because the growing season in Yemen apparently is the opposite of Eretz Yisrael, and it was extremely difficult to be careful about the prohibition of Chadash, which is odd because in Yemen, they do everything like the Rambam, and the Rambam holds that Chadash is an Isser Daraisa in all places and all times, so it's hard to figure that one out exactly. But so we have a problem. So why were people in Europe and currently in America going off that laxity that they had in Europe, why were they not careful about the prohibition of Chadash?
Well, once
they've
also been to harvested by Goyim anyway, so
you want to say like the Bach. So basically, the poskim were trying to find a heter, or a limud zchus rather, for the people who were not careful about Chodesh, because 99% of Rishonim, Ashkenazi Rishonim, Sephardi Rishonim, everyone, 99% of Rishonim say that, like the Sefer HaChinuch says, that the prohibition of Chodesh, it says in the Torah, says in all your dwelling places. So again, there's a discussion that means, but one interpretation is that it applies in any place where Jews might live, including in Chutz La'aretz. So this, to figure out exactly what's going on over here, we have to go back all the way to the earliest sources that that talk about Chadash. So the Mishnah in the end of Maseches Kiddushin, that we have the famous Mishnah to talk about how every land agricultural-based mitzvah is applicable only in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz Laaretz. And then it says in that Mishnah, it includes certain exceptions to this rule about agricultural mitzvahs that are relevant outside the land of Israel. So it says, Reb Lazar Omer Af HaChadosh. He says, even Chadash is applicable in Chutz Laaretz. So from that Mishnah, it sounds like it's a minority opinion that Chadash is applicable in Chutz Laaretz. But the Mishnah in Orla says, at the end of Orla, just says Stam.
French.
Okay, so it sounds like there is no disagreement about it, and the Mishnah is ruling that Chadash is applicable in Chutz Laaretz. And in fact, that seems to be the accepted opinion, although there's an odd thing in the Gemara in Menachos, brings a disagreement amongst the Amoraim who lived in Bavel, whether Chadash outside of Israel is prohibited midaraisa or midarabanan. The Mishnah never mentioned that it's prohibited midrabanan. Either it's a prohibited midaraisa or it's a mutter. So what does it mean it's prohibited midrabanan? But in any event, the conclusion of the Gemara in Menacho seems to be, like the Stam Mishnah over there, then Orla, that Chodosh is prohibited midaraisa. But you see, you have an underlying current, you know, even in the Chachamim in those times, that either it doesn't apply in Chutz Laretz or that it only applies midrabanan in Chutz Laretz. But nevertheless, the conclusion of Chazal seems to be that it applies midaraisa in even Chutz Laretz, and that's 99% of poskim. So the problem in Chutz Laretz is that, in certain places in Chutz Laretz, is that it was extremely difficult to be makbid on this because the growing season didn't correspond and you have to go the whole winter without bread, basically, or just with very minimal grain products. So therefore, they were not careful about this. The Ramo says it's because some sort of svek sveka. They are not sure whether the grain was from this year or from last year, or maybe if it was from this year, it took root before the second day of Pesach. But some poskim say they don't understand how that could be a svek sveka, double doubt. So that's one justification. So if you have no idea where this grain comes from, basically, says the Rama, then you don't have to be concerned that it might potentially be chadash. That's the Rama's basic thesis. According to other poskim, the Or Zarua says that we hold that chadash in Chutz Laretz is the Rabbanan, like the Shita and the Gemara that seems not to be accepted. I want to paskin that chadash in Chutz Laretz is the Rabbanan, so therefore if there's a suffix, then you can go Lekula. Problem with that is, maybe there's no suffix, And also, how did he decide to paskin like this? And he says himself that it's only because that it was impossible to be careful about it. That the people who gave all these reasonings say that it's really just because they wouldn't have bread and they wouldn't have what to eat if they were makbid on the prohibition of chadash. The most far-ranging and lenient approach is that of the Sefer HaTruma, which the Aruch HaShulchan likes. The Aruch HaShulchan brings all the other reasons for leniency. He says, I don't like any of those, but he says, this is probably the real reason why people are makel. Sefer HaTruma was a student of Rabbeinu Tam, and he says, even more, he goes even farther than the Or Zarua, which is, he says, that Chodosh in Chutz Laretz is Derabanan. And not only that, you know how we have this principle by Trumas Umaisris. So you know that Chazal instituted Trumas Umaisris in certain places in Chutz Laretz. They have to separate tithes. So just like Chazal only instituted the requirement of Trumas Umaisris in lands that were close to Eretz Yisrael, he says the Chadash is the same, big Chiddush, nobody else mentioned this. They says the Chazal, it's the Rabbanan, and Chazal only instituted the prohibition of Chadash in lands that are close to Eretz Yisrael, like Egypt and Jordan and Syria, maybe Babylonia, Lebanon. But what?
Lebanon, probably.
Right, Lebanon, but did not, that's part of Syria.
Right,
so he says, even if you know for sure that it's Chadash and Chutz Laretz, no problem whatsoever, because Chazal never made the Gzera here in France, Germany, the U.S., there's no prohibition of Chadash at all. We also have the prohibition that was accepted by many, the leniency that was accepted by many people of the Bach, that the Bach says that the prohibition of Chadash, again, almost against almost everyone else, that the prohibition of Chadash and Chutz Laretz only applies to grain that was grown by Jews. But if the grain was grown by non-Jews, then the prohibition of Chadash does not apply. So that's what a lot of other people relied on also, even if they knew for sure that this was Chadash. And apparently the Baal Shem Tov was very enamored of the Bach. So he said, apparently the Baal Shem Tov was sitting there once with a glass of beer. And he's like, should I drink it? Should I not drink it? You know, it might be Chadash. So somebody said to him, you know, Rebbe, you know, the Bach, he's the Bach. Look in the Bach. The Bach says that if it was grown by non-Jews, it's okay. So the Baal Shem Tov says, oh, the Bach. Oh, the Bach. We can rely on the Bach. And he drank the beer. That's why a lot of chassidim are not makbid on Yashan, even if it's readily available. Okay, they have this. But other chassidish groups actually were, or chassidish rebbes in history, were makbid on Yashan, which is obviously the opposite of Chadash. So we have so there were certain rabbis throughout history who were makbid on this. They were known as saying, what do you mean? So we have 99% of Rishonim say it's an absolute Isser Daraisa. So you're a Tzachi of Malkus to eat the Chodosh in Chutz Laretz. So we have to be Makbid on this. So they exerted great effort to be Makbid on the prohibition of Chodosh. Most famously, perhaps, is the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says, the Vilna Gaon's approach in halachas, he didn't go with these, well, there's another shita and chazal that holds it's okay, and the minhag is to be mekels, he didn't go with these things. He says, no, the conclusion of chazal is that it's an iser daraisa, period, everywhere in the world, so we have no choice, even if it's really, really, really hard, so we have to be makbid to eat only yashan. So the Vilna Gaon was very makbid on yashan. He's didn't could take into consideration the other shita at all. You know, he wouldn't give someone else chodash tit because of lifnei iver, although his student, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, was already a little more make on this. Even though he personally was makbid on yashan, he used to serve chodash on his table for his guests, and he didn't consider it to be a problem of lifnei iver. So it's really a question when you're deciding this issue of yashan and chodash, one's halachic philosophy as to whether if something was, if the Klal Yisrael had a great leniency that was observed for so many years, so what's that status? Is it, we consider it that somehow there's some siyata d'shamaya that really they were doing the right thing, or no, should we try to reverse it and go according to the simple understanding of the halacha as paskin like 99% of Rishonim? So the truth is that even those who did matir chadosh in chutz laretz, they all say explicitly that it's because there was no other choice, that there was no other choice, and people would starve, people wouldn't have had what to eat, it would have been extremely difficult to be on a mass scale, to be makbid on the prohibition of chadosh in chutz laretz, in these places, so therefore they had to come up with some sort of leniency. But people, this is an article in the New RJJ journal that you gave me, in the New RJJ journal, people point out that in the U.S., there's no sort of shortage of food. It's extremely makbid to be careful about chodesh. In fact, in New York especially, in most major Jewish communities, every kosher bakery is now yashan. Mm-hmm. It's printed on the package. Nasa mikemach yashan, yashan, yashan. So why not? Why not? Rabbi Bleich told me that he used to be mekel on chodesh because the Rama says, "Nu, if you have some sort of grain, you don't know its provenance." So there's a svek sveka. That's what it says in our Ashkenazi Shulchan Aruch in the Rama. It says there's a svek sveka on it, so you can be mekel. But he said that there's this fellow named Yosef Herman. So Yosef Herman publishes what's called the Guide to Chodesh, where he tells you the dating codes on different products, so you can figure out when it was produced and whether any grain product it happens to be yashan, and you could buy it even if you want to be makbid on it, and even if it doesn't say explicitly on the package yashan. So he says Yosef Herman now published a guide where you can figure out based on the dating codes whether something is yashan. So Rabbi Bleich told me he said in a certain extent this fellow did a disservice, because now the Svek Sveka doesn't apply anymore. You can figure out with ease any product whether it's yashan or not, so therefore there's no suffix. And you could get the Vada Yashan very easily, so then even the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch does not apply nowadays. So again, this is a very big question. Why the Minag has continued to be Makbid, not to be Makbid on Yashan in America? In fact, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, there wasn't a problem of Yashan at all in America. There was no, they used to have a very big surplus of grain. So they always were trying to deplete the old stock so that you hardly ever got to the new grain. So all the wheat and all the grains in America were automatically yashan. We didn't have to think about it at all. But then they started selling a surplus of grain to Russia. So then they started tapping into the stocks of the new grain, and then yashan became a problem. And that's when certain people who started the yashan movement in America, like famously Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. So Aaron Soloveitchik was very, very into yashan. So when he discovered that they started selling the wheat surplus to Russia, so that's why he started being makbid to eat things that only were certified as being yashan. So back in those days, it was much harder to get things that were certified as yashan. But now it's very easy. So people, it's recommended that as much as possible. Again, I'm not saying that you have to stop eating at all your friends' houses, stop eating at weddings for all this, but as much as possible, it's certainly a good idea. We'd like to see that the Jewish community in America moving towards a greater level of Yashin observance, because, like I said, there's no reason to be makel nowadays, really, because there's plenty of food and plenty of certified Yashin food, and also we have freezers and storage space that we can store up food from the Yashin season for when there's a problem of Chadash. So we'd like to try to push the community into a greater level, a greater consciousness of observance of the prohibition of Chadash in Chutz Laretz. The Mishneh Berurah even says, he says, okay, maybe you won't be able to be makbid on it all the time. Maybe you'll have to go eat out at certain points where you won't know whether the stuff is Yashan, and then you have the Sfek Sveka maybe. But where it was possible, when you're buying food for yourself and you have control of what you're eating, so it's, why not? You should try to be makbid as much as possible on the prohibition of Chadash, which according to 99% of Rishonim is an Isser D'oraisa, even in Chutz Laretz.